Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay and joining us for the first time to the Recs, it's Lioness and Arsenal striker Danielle Carter. Welcome, Danielle.
Hiya, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Danielle's initiation here on the Offside Rule, we gave her a very testing game to watch. To the links, joining Danielle, academic journalist and author of Roar of the Lionesses and the upcoming Pride of the Lionesses, it's Dr. Carrie Dunn.
Hello there, and I'm not a jinx before you say it. I don't jinx these matches.
Every time, pretty much, Carrie's been in, the game's gone to extra time. Oh. Practically nearly every time. It was written in the stars, or was it? We'll get on to that in just a moment. Danielle, quick thoughts from you, first of all, on this tournament so far.
I think it's been a really entertaining tournament besides today's game.
Caveat.
Yeah. Before today's game, no, it's been really, really enjoyable. I think it's gripped every single nation, respectively.
And the Lionesses?
Yeah, definitely, massively in England. It's everywhere, on every paper, all over social media. Support from pretty much anybody and everybody. So, yeah, it's really exciting times for football in England, for women.
Well, there's more on the Lionesses to come. We'll chat about that a bit later. But first, the small matter of who will play against USA in the Women's World Cup final on Sunday. Well, here's your first clue. From your favourite orange-coloured fans, to the left, Lynx, to the right, Rex... There you go. Well, it didn't quite have the thrill factor of England-USA, but after extra time was called upon, and it felt like a very long wait as well, Jackie Gronin put the Dutch ahead, and there it remained, 1-0 to the Netherlands against Sweden. They reached their first ever World Cup final, the Dutch, and Sweden play England for a bronze medal. So the first ever Women's World Cup semi-final to go to extra time, Carrie, and ironically the one that we really didn't kind of want an extra 30 minutes of. Your frustrations with the game, please.
I was kind of excited for this one because I thought it could low-key be a really good, entertaining, end-to-end kind of thing. And it was quite end-to-end. It just... weren't any chances, really. I mean, the goalkeepers both played fantastically, so you have to give credit to them, particularly in the second half. But yeah, both teams were set up very cagily. It was very tentative, and the crowd kind of responded in that way right from the off. They were surprisingly subdued for a noisy set of fans as well.
And we had that excellent game last night from England-USA, so it felt like a bit of a come down.
Yeah, no, definitely a come down. But on the other hand, they were both a bit... just reserved, I guess. Like, they just didn't want to lose. You can see that both teams didn't want to lose, but at the same time, no one was really pushing for the goal or pushing to actually win the game until...
It was bizarre, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, surely it was. It was kind of strange. I don't know if they was playing for extra time, playing for pens.
No urgency from either side then, Carrie, in regular time. The Dutch fought much harder in extra time, though, and that was the difference, wasn't it?
They did. Bringing on Van der Sanden also made a difference, which is weird because she didn't actually play that well, but what she did do, she created chaos. And I think she just really puzzled the Sweden defence because she was certainly puzzling me. But just the fact that she was there made the difference, I think.
So she came on in regular time and we knew she was on because she's done the hair, Megan Rapinoe tribute, I think. It's pink and she's a personality. She is a tour de force. And to her credit, she tried her best to liven it up.
Oh, she did. She did, certainly. And she was trying to get the crowd to wake up a bit and get behind them. You know, the volume went up. And I think that also contributed towards the Netherlands actually pushing over the line.
What about the Swedes? I mean, where were they? Because we were impressed with them against Germany, Dan. So where were they tonight?
That's a good question. I was actually really looking forward to watching this game. I couldn't place my bet with either team. I thought it was going to be really tight, really close, a lot of action. Ultimately, the Swedes didn't actually turn up. I can't really remember any clear-cut chances that they may have had, besides the save from Sari from Segar. Besides that, literally, I think they had about 13, 14 corners. Nothing to show for it.
And then, well, this.
Groene schieten, and that is the goal! It is 1-0 for Nederland!
and we needed it. The winning goal from Jackie Gronin in the 99th minute, hard and low from outside the box, showing Manchester United fans carry a glimpse of what they can expect next season.
Yeah, she took this really well. Apparently it was her first shot on target at all this tournament, so it's a pretty good time to do that. Yeah, a really, really cool finish from long distance, straight along the ground with power. So that was a good goal, I guess, after a fairly...
We needed it.
A fairly, yeah. fairly dismal match. At least it was a good goal that won it.
A very well-taken goal. And I think it was just good to see a shot come off, really. So as soon as it left her foot, I was hoping it went in because... Not a lot was going well that game.
We've really sold this today.
Yeah.
We have massively sold. I'm so proud of the way that we've sold this. But look, you know, it is important to be real. And sometimes the occasion, did it get to either of the sides, perhaps? I just think for me, the Dutch play in one gear. And not until they are forced to, like until it goes to extra time, until there's really not very many minutes on the clock, do they do something about it. Sweden, for me, disappointed. Maybe they were tired. They just lacked any edge at all. And we saw players like Sofia Jakobsen. She had a great game the last game. And the link-up play as well. You know, you've got Sega playing out into Aslani. There was just none of that nice, cute stuff that they'd been doing all tournament. OK, well, let's get the Netherlands take on this post-match by speaking to Anne-Marie Posma, Dutch women's football journalist. Anne-Marie, thanks for joining us. Look, it's remarkable, really, because the Netherlands had to get through two rounds of playoffs to even get to this World Cup, and now they're in the final. How are the team feeling, and what's changed for them between those playoffs and between now, between them making the final?
Well, the thing is, they told us that the thing that actually changed was that 2 years ago, everything they touched, like every ball they touched, everything was just turning to gold, basically. And the thing they had to get used to was that wasn't happening anymore. So the new strategy, what they had to work on was work harder, like fight for it. And that's what you see is happening now. Every game that's been a 0-0 or 1-1, like a draw till the last minute, they believe they can still make that goal. And that belief they show, it also, yeah, it's for the opponent. Yeah, they feel that too. It's what Sweden felt today. So that's what they worked on, and that's what pays off. Like, keep working hard to the last second. Be fit as well. They're so fit. You could see the difference. So, yeah, well, and now they're in the final.
What's your honest assessment of the game? Because it was quite a frustrating one for us to watch here. How's it been received by the Netherlands fans and by the media over there?
Well, frustrating, to be honest. I mean, we've all seen the match yesterday. Some of us were in the stadium. And then it's frustrating to see that you have two teams and they're basically staying on their half. And then especially when it comes to the Dutch team, like so many passes back behind. Like, why not be more positive, like more through the middle, more to the front, you know, like try to get to the other goal in maybe in five or six touches. And that's so frustrating. I almost wanted to run down the stairs and just give them a little push or something, you know. So that was the feeling at halftime. And then the second half, you could see that they got a little bit more space, and that's good for the Netherlands. If they have more space, they can play a little bit more their own game, and plus they were more fit. But the first half particularly was frustrating.
Yeah, definitely. It's been well over an hour since the end of the game, probably about an hour and a half, actually. So it must have been a very long mix zone. Were there plenty of comments from the Netherlands players? How have they been reacting to the win?
Yeah, well, there were a lot of people from the international press, from the national media, so they had to come a long way, talk to everyone. And what really struck me most was how calm they all were. There were barely any emotions. Some of the emotions they already showed on the pitch, but really calm. And it was just disbelief, I would call it. Just pure disbelief. Like, we were hoping for it, you're dreaming about it, but then it's happening, and then you have no idea how to react to that, that you're actually in a World Cup final. That's, yeah. They all told us that Esper the Sadi van Veenendaal, Arsenal's goalie for the last couple of seasons, she's like, I don't even I don't know. I'm so tired. I want to go to bed. I want to sleep. That's what she said.
Wow.
That's what she said. Like, she's just like, that's all I want to do now. It's just, it was too much for her.
Wow. Well, I think that all of you guys there are probably with her because it's now 1 a.m. over there in France. So I know everyone's had a very long day. Any other nice lines from the players? I know that Jackie Groenen was put up for the press conference along with the Netherlands coach Serena Weigman.
Yeah, well, Groene, it's her third goal for the national team. She never shoots on the goal, and all the players were kind of mocking her for the last few weeks. Like, come on, you got to shoot once, you know? Well, today she did, and she scored the most important goal in her career so far, and so far also of the tournament. So it was a good thing she listened to her teammates. Mm. And yeah, of course, I mean, she's very proud of that. She was very happy and proud of the team as well. And they were both, Wiegman as well, being honest about how the first half had been, and also pointing out the fight they'd put up at the last minute. And that's really the strength of the team as well, that you again could see how the subs were playing today. You know, Shanice van der Sande, she had not the best few days. And she came in and she gave this amazing energy.
She made the difference, you know? Yeah. I totally agree.
Yeah.
What about the game against the USA, a Women's World Cup final against the reigning champions? They've been in every final for the last three Women's World Cup tournaments. What are the teams saying about the prospect of facing them?
Well, they say it's going to be tough. They say they know it's going to be tough. They're not going to lie about that. They also say it's at the end, it's just one game, so anything can happen. But I think the players of the American players, of course, have been watching tonight. I don't think they're going to be really nervous based on what they saw tonight. Mm. So they're going to be so confident. I mean, the Americans are already confident, you know, and they're going to be more confident tonight.
Yes.
So, yeah, the one thing you got to do for Sunday, and which I really, really hope they do, is just give it your all, like from the first second. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared. Be confident and just give everything you have. It's the last match of the tournament. And if they do that, they might be up for a surprise, but yeah, that's just what I hope, being Dutch.
Yeah, well, me too as well, because arguably we are yet to see that really, you know, attacking, forceful, physical football from the Netherlands. Look, I'm sure that we will speak again. Thank you so much for joining us here on The Offside Rule. Anne-Marie Postma, Dutch women's football journalist, thank you. The Americans must be delighted.
They'll be happy that it went to extra time, and they'll be happy at the kind of grueling nature, I guess, of the 120 minutes. USA will have conserved their energy. They've got much a greater strength and depth, I think, than the Netherlands.
Who are the USA going to be wary? Are they going to be wary about any element of this Netherlands side, or are they just going to play their game?
I think they'll be naive to underestimate the Dutch team. Obviously, we've got Viv DVD in the middle. So, you know, the Dutch have got a lot of good quality players who can cause the USA team problems. So if the USA team go in thinking they've already won the game, then that'll be very naive of them. And I don't actually think they will. I think they have to give credit and respect to the Dutch team. And I think it'll be a much more interesting game on Sunday.
DVD, not some reference to an antiquated audio device, audio-visual device there from Dan Carter, Daniela van der Donk. Well, you know, we're used to speaking about these Dutch superstars. Miedemar today, pretty quiet. I mean, I didn't see much of her at all.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if she's conserving her energy for the final or what it is. But yeah, to be fair, a lot of the Dutch players weren't really, but as with the Swedish players, no one really stood out for me today. But there's a final on Sunday, and I'm sure a lot of their players will step up.
Is there any more to come from this Dutch side? Are they playing the long game? Have they fooled us all?
That would be a hell of a long game, wouldn't it? I do think there is more to come from them.
Do you?
I really do. I do. I don't know whether that's wishful thinking. I do that a lot. but no, I think they can. They must be able to play better than that, obviously. So, yeah, I think they'll be better than that on Sunday.
Offside Rulers, if you're looking for something else to fill your podcast plate while the Women's World Cup enters the dessert phase, then feast your ears with the Totally Football Show, where this week we've got a bite of this
that strength and kind of coordination that he's got makes him a definite asset. It's just weird to see Spurs sign someone.
A sprinkling of this.
I must say, if there's one team I really, really want to return to the Premier League, it's Nottingham Forest. But they just seem to be locked in this perpetual disastrous circle. False dawn after false dawn, or even no false dawn, just abject failure.
And a huge dollop of this. So search for the award-winning Totally Football Show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Audio Boom and all the usual places, and keep up to date with what we're doing at The Totally Show.
Welcome back to the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. I'm Kate Borsay, and with me in the studio, Danielle Carter and Carrie Dunn. Dr. Carrie Dunn. That's how clever she is, Danielle.
It's quite impressive.
You're doing a master's at the moment. Quiet. I did a master's late in life. We're sat with an academic, already feeling intimidated.
Yeah, credit to you.
Now, need we be reminded? But England lost their semi-final on Tuesday night and will now play for the bronze medal on Saturday. So by way of some therapy, we caught up with a man who has a foot in both camps, Rory Smith, chief soccer correspondent for the New York Times. Rory, it feels wrong calling you a chief soccer correspondent. What's that about?
You get used to it after a while. I'm quite fortunate. My dad, who is English, has always called it soccer.
Oh,
I don't
really?
Know why. But he... Yeah, no, I did it on Twitter quite a lot. Like, people say, no, you can't take anyone seriously who calls themselves a soccer correspondent. And I would agree that I shouldn't be taken seriously. But soccer's an English word. It's World Soccer. It's Soccer Saturday. It's there's another one, Soccer AM. It's an English word. And I think there's a generation of people from, like, the 50s who maybe call it soccer sort of interchangeably with football.
Interesting, indeed.
It interests me more than it should.
I can tell. Are you missing tea as much as Alex Morgan appears to be?
It's a funny one, that. I'm not convinced that was a dig at England, but I think Alex Morgan decided that if it could be interpreted as a dig at England, then it should be. She's done it before, and I know that there's kind of gifts of Kristen Press doing the same thing that were made in April, when I presume, you know, that England would have been really far from their thoughts. And she said initially last night that it was to do with the noise around the USWNT and kind of everything the team had been through, which, to be honest, isn't a brilliant explanation for it. But
no,
when it was then put to her that
drinking a cup of tea, I don't buy that one at all.
But then someone said to her, you know, was it a little bit of a dig at England? She said, look, you guys said it, not me. So she's obviously happy for it to be taken that way, I guess. It feels... It's a strange rivalry, that. It was quite a spiky game, I thought. Alyssa Nair and Ellen White probably won't be on each other's Christmas card lists, I guess. And there seemed to be kind of a genuine rivalry, but both sides seem to deny that there is a rivalry, which is very odd. Whether it was just a kind of bad-tempered game to the stakes were so high, I'm not entirely sure, but... Yeah, it wasn't played in a spirit of total harmony, has to be said.
So I was going to ask you about this, because the line from the USA is that England aren't a rival because they don't have any rivals, because they're the world's best and they don't have to worry about anyone else. Yet, by the depths of their celebration after the game, I would say that they had treated England like a rival and they were genuinely pleased and relieved to have got through the semi-final.
I think they probably felt that England were the biggest threat to them. I think that I'm conscious that there's quite a lot of Dutch and Swedish fans walking past me, so I should keep my voice relatively quiet. But I think looking at the draw, I think they probably worked out that if they got through France and England, they were almost home.
Yeah.
Because the Dutch are the European champions, and they certainly got players to threaten the States. But in terms of the depth and the athleticism, which I think is so important in taking on this American team, I think England were probably the best equipped to deal with that. And the French obviously had home advantage. So
yeah.
I think there was a degree of relief in getting through it. I do think that's true, that they don't really see themselves as having actual rivals other than history, to be honest. I think their big rivals are the 1999 team. That's who they kind of gauge themselves against. That's the position that they want to occupy in the kind of the firmament of American sports. So I think that they do set themselves apart from other mere mortals. And there is a... Arrogance is probably pushing it, but there's
certainly a
sort of ultra-confidence about this American team that kind of infuses everything they do. It's not so much that they expect to win every game. I just genuinely don't think they know that they might lose.
You know, the US, it is... You know, pretty much mandatory, thanks to Title IX, it is pretty much mandatory for girls to play soccer at school the whole way through. And then, of course, it's tied into college scholarships, etc. And so there is a defined talent path there. And to see that and to see the result of that must be great for the FA to look at in terms of a model.
that I think is fascinating. It'll be really interesting to see how it develops in the years to come, because the US strength is built on this college model. And I know that people sort of recoil, understandably, from comparisons between the women's and the men's game. And I think mostly they are really unhelpful. But in this one instance, I think it's probably valid. The US college model does not work in men's football, and they have abandoned it because they've realized that asking players to wait until they're 22 means you're costing them vital developmental years. So now the MLS teams have academies, and a lot of American kids are kind of looking to Germany in particular to kind of continue their education. I do wonder whether with a fully professionalized Europe and those kind of industrial player production methods that the Western European nations have, whether the Americans might at some point think, actually, they're going to overtake us. Because the advantage for so long has been physical, effectively, that against semi-pro players, fully professional players who've been training 20 hours a week since they were 18, were fitter and stronger and quicker and therefore basically outlasted their opponents. That won't apply when the big Western European nations are professional, are fully professional, and that professionalism is embedded. So I think that's the other narrative over the next 4 years, to see how that continues. Can the Americans compete, or is that advantage that they've always had being eroded slowly but surely as Europe kind of wakes up and realises its own power?
All right, Carrie, well, you've heard what Rory Smith had to say about that tea celebration, which is obviously, you know, one of the talking points of that game. Your take, please.
I didn't think it looked like she was drinking tea at all, to
you
be honest.
You thought that she looked like she was smoking a spliff.
I did think that it looked like she was smoking a spliff, yes. And also, even if she was sipping tea, that could mean like a million things. I didn't know whether she meant, well, but once I saw that people thought that she was sipping tea, I was like, okay, so is that like the slang expression, sipping tea? Is she taking the mickey out of Britishness?
Or was she taking the mickey out of Phil Neville and his talk about etiquette about, you know, the USA
exactly.
going to the team
hotel? I need subtitles for these people.
All of and any of the above. There's nothing like the Americans trying to do humour, is there?
Yeah, and they can't drink tea properly, evidently, because it could go all over your face and scald you. It'd be horrible.
Dan, what about you?
Well, I've got some inside information. I don't think it had any relevance to England or British people. I feel like we had
a breaking news flash. A big
Yeah, no, I think as we do, I think we've just overreacted and we've tried to run with a story against
So basically
Alex Morgan,
nothing.
Really. No, I don't think there's got anything to do with England at all. I think it's just ironic the timing and the team she'd done it against, and people for obviously just wanted to jump on her and Slater for that. But yeah, no, I don't see anything wrong with it. Even if it was a tea celebration, I don't
Who
see
cares?
Anything wrong with it.
Yeah. Well, here's Megan Rapinoe's reaction to the suggestion that some England fans might have thought the celebration was a bit obtuse.
Wah, wah, wah. I mean, it's like we're at the World Cup. What do you want us to do? This is the biggest stage, the biggest moment. I don't think anyone truly believes that we disrespect the game or disrespect our opponents.
So that's so interesting what she's saying, because literally the first person to start complaining about it and saying it is distasteful is Leanne Sanderson, who Megan Rapinoe is going to know and obviously used to play for England. I didn't see any fans complaining about it until Leanne started tweeting about it.
Yeah, literally everyone just jumped on the bandwagon. That's how I've seen it. Again, even if it was a tea celebration, taking the mickey out of British people, I couldn't care less. She's in a semi-final at the World Cup. Just scored what happened to be the winner. So,
and now she's in the final.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on from tea and talk about the most watched programme on the BBC this year, that semi-final. And it was a brilliant game, Dan, as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think the World Cup has really brought the nation together. I would say even more so than the Men's World Cup last year.
I think really? Okay.
Yeah, I'll say there's definitely... Yeah. We have generated more fans for the women's game.
Yes.
And that alone, we just need to build momentum. We need to follow through. Obviously, our domestic league starting shortly. So hopefully the FA and all the clubs can pull through together and really take that momentum from the World Cup.
Yeah, so what's your request as a player who's played for England? And my goodness, you know, you've had an up and down career. Mm-hmm. You have suffered some serious injury. You've worked hard for your place on that mm-hmm. pitch. You so have. You know, you are part of the legacy as well now. What's your request? What do you want to see?
I think we need the same energy from media outlets, from the FA, from club support in their players at the World Cup, going into the domestic league. I think there's so many fans out there who want to see us play now, who want to see women's football everywhere. They want to click on the websites, they want to click on
social media. Are those websites easy enough to find?
I think they're easy enough to find. I don't know if they're updated as often as what they should be during the season. So yeah, definitely, again, it's just a case of having it there in people's faces. Don't give people an option. Make people carry on talk about it. And hopefully the performances on the pitch and the games can keep the audience there.
What happened after the 2015 World Cup?
It blew up massively. Attendances rose for a certain period.
Some of them doubled, didn't they?
Yeah. They doubled for a certain period and then it seemed to just fizzle out slightly. So I definitely don't want to see that happen. I think it's a case of keeping on top of things. Marketing is key. Literally, don't give people a choice. Pull it in their face. Make them want to come and watch and keep up to date with what's going on.
Carrie, you know this international setup. You know the domestic setup. You've written books on it as well. From your perspective, anything to add into that?
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm probably a bit more cautious on this and a bit more pessimistic than Dan. So you mentioned my academic stuff, and the 2015 tournament was the last time I did a big piece of academic research. And the FA have always had the growth of the national team as one of the aims behind this Women's Super League. So it's all been kind of geared towards having a successful England team.
Hence the change in seasons as well.
Exactly. And so what happened after the 2015 World Cup? They were basically not expecting England to do as well as they did. So the team landed back at Heathrow, and then within a week they would have their next home game for their clubs. And so the clubs were kind of panicking, thinking, what are we going to do? These women probably aren't going to play because they're absolutely shattered, but we need to do something. So a lot of the clubs had like presentations of bouquets on the pitch, which is lovely. And that was the week in which all these attendances doubled. But because the WSL is, as we've talked before, it has this kind of elongated season. It kind of runs the same time as the men's season does, but it doesn't have as many fixtures. And so you then had like 4 weeks until the next game. And so by that time, the kind of hype had dipped. And I wrote an article kind of 4 years ago saying exactly the same things that Dan has just said. The Lionesses have kind of inspired a nation. They've caught the imagination. Now get down to your local WSL club and support them every week. It hasn't happened. I mean, we saw fantastic viewing figures last night, obviously much bigger than the ones for Canada. Obviously, it's a much nicer time zone. But then you have to compare it to the kind of average attendances we're getting at WSL clubs. We're still kind of looking at just under 1,000 for home games, which is still not what we ever want to be.
What are your thoughts on the suggestion that the Premier League might take over the running of the WSL? I think if the intentions are good, then why not? Because they have the money. As long as they're not expecting a like-for-like return and they're happy to grow the game. And it's different when they took over the men's league because it was already big. It was already popular. There were already sell-out stadiums. And they basically created a huge TV revenue, huge TV audience for it. With the women's game, there is a lot more building to do. It needs to come from the ground up, but this is a great place to start. So, you know, I think why not? As long as their intentions are good, then why not put more money and why not put a sustainable full-time model behind it? Because you could argue that actually the FA's job isn't to look after professional leagues. The FA's job is to grow grassroots football.
Absolutely, and I agree with that. But the concern that I would have, again, is that the women's game is at such a kind of precarious stage still, I think, in terms of full-time professionalism. You're still going to have this massive gulf between WSL and Championship, which worries me, and also then Championship and National League. It's these gaps between the divisions that concern me. I'm kind of quite happy for WSL to tick along almost as it is at the moment and kind of gain its own momentum. It's the leaps of clubs between amateur to semi-pro to full-time pro and then back down again if they're relegated. That's what concerns me, that lack of consistency.
Let's talk about Sweden, England and the bronze medal match. Carrie, what do you expect from this one?
Sweden are going to have to come out and attack more against England because England are not going to sit back in the way the Netherlands did. They're not going to allow Sweden to do that either.
No, they've got under 72 hours to travel to a hot area of France and perform. Can they do it, Dan?
Well, I'm obviously biased and I'm rooting for the girls. Based on Sweden's performance today, I'm not worried.
Great.
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, no, I'm not worried with how they performed today. And especially in the case of they've got less time to recover. Aslani's probably been their better player and I'm not sure what her injury status is. So,
who's really impressed you in this England side? Because these are your teammates. These are the people that you play against. These are the people that you've known in the international setup for years and years. Who's really impressed you? Who have you been delighted for?
Early on in the tournament, it was definitely the right-hand side with Nikita Paris and Lucy Bronze. I think them two as a pair, they terrorised early on. And then throughout the tournament, Ellen White, I'm so chuffed, I'm so happy that she has sort of taken this tournament by the scruff of its neck and really, really made a name for herself after the sort of career she's had and the injury problem she's had. So, yeah, I'm over the moon for Elves.
Yeah, it's great to see, I'm sure from your point of view, so many players progress and look like they're enjoying their football as well. Of course, it was a heartbreaking outcome of the semi-final, but we do have this bronze medal match to focus on. And I think, you know, cautiously, we've got to be optimistic about this unless Sweden manage to recover and pull something back. Let's get your score predictions then, shall we? Let's sum all this up and ask you, Carrie Dunn, what do you think, Sweden versus England?
3-1 England.
Okay. Dan Carter?
I was 3-0 pushing 4-0.
Ooh, she fancies some goals.
And, I fancy some
and
goals.
And why not? Because it is kind of all or nothing. And I'd love to see England exit this tournament with something really exciting like that. Okay, that's the score predictions from the team here in the studio. You can make your own. You can get in touch with us at Offside Rule Pod on all types of social media. Have a look at pictures of us during this tournament. And also offsideRulePodcast.com, our website. There's some fantastic colour pieces on there. There is a great assessment of the England-USA game, as well as things that we've learnt from these semi-finals as well. So do check out all the fantastic web content. As for Team Offside Rule Pod here in the studio, well, we are back recording on Saturday night after that bronze medal match, so you'll be able to hear us in the wee small hours of Sunday morning. Until then, good listeners, see you later.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.